Let's move to item five, which is our central focus for today, which is going to be a review of our private credit allocation by StepStone. So I know we're going to move some folks over. Here's Ariel. There's Ariel. Good morning.
Morning, Scott. And we should also have Marcel and Ors joining.
All right. Got, see, Mitch has joined, but I don't see Marcel or Ors yet.
Well, we'll give Marcel and Urs a minute here. I think while we're waiting on them, I can go ahead and offer up an introduction to the topic and they can get logged on here before I turn it over to the StepStone folks.
And Marcel has joined, Tim, just so you know.
Great.
And Urs has joined as well.
So apologies for my voice. I'm getting over a 10-day cold, but hopefully my voice holds out. If not, Mitch is prepared to pinch hit for me here, but we're going to run through this. We do have our annual review with StepStone on the private credit side of the equation today. I think, you know, this is something we review annually. It's differentiated from the relationship we have on the private equity side. And I just kind of want to walk through what we mean when we talk about private equity, specifically within the context of what StepStone does for us. I think when we talk about private assets in general, certainly private equity and private real estate, we're talking about value creation. We're talking about restructurings. We're talking about add-ons and trying to create something new. Within private credit, there are lots of different flavors. The dominant flavor we pursue is called direct lending. We're making loans into private companies, and these are tend to be middle market companies. Some of the unique attributes about what private lending looks like is this is floating rate debt. So as rates rise in the overall market, these loans reset higher and can float lower if interest rates come down. They tend to be fairly short term and they tend to be super senior. And the reason we have this StepStone structure is that we wanted to be able to set the terms that each one of the underlying private credit managers would use to select loans on our behalf. And we wanted to be able to keep this classified as an alternative investment under California law. So StepStone operates as kind of our master manager. They do the selection of the underlying private credit managers. They set the guidelines according to the master structure, and they do the monitoring. So that's just kind of, you know, I want to make sure everybody has it clear. This is relatively, sedate is the wrong word, but this is something where we're looking to get paid back. We're looking to get paid for coupons. We're looking to, you know, if possible, hold the loan to maturity. But, you know, the risks here are we get refinanced out early or there's some problem with this and you have to kind of take over and take over the restructuring process here. But this, generally speaking, is the more sedate portion of the private program, just looking to get paid back. And StepStone really is operating as our master oversight manager on this stuff. So given that, you know, it's a big piece of the portfolio with this unique structure, we do bring StepStone in annually to go over a market update, kind of what's going on with dynamics of the industry, what's going on with deployment of our capital, and, you know, provide any other comments that make sense. But let me pause there before I turn it over to Ariel, Marcel, and Urs and see if there's any trustee questions.
All right. Thank you, Tim. Are there any questions of Tim on the overview before we proceed? I'm not seeing any hands up, Tim. So I think we're ready to move forward.
Great. I'll turn it over to Ariel.
Great. Thanks. I'm going to share my screen. So give me 1 second. Make it bigger. Apologies. Can everyone see my screen?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to mute and I'll let Marcel start.
Thank you very much, Tim and Ariel, for the introduction. Good morning to everyone. Thanks again that we can participate in this meeting. Again, not physical, physically, hopefully next year we make it to see you. First of all, I would like to thank all the trustees for their trust, but as well the investment team for the good cooperation over the year. Let me start with the most important point, you know, the mandate that we have as of June 30th of this year performs well and within our expectation. But we thought, considering the recent market events and the uncertainty that we see in the markets going forward, we have prepared a bit more an update on the markets to start with, to show you what we see as market developments, where we see potential threats, and where we see as well opportunities in a market environment like this. If we move on to the first slide, Ariel, I think I provide you, as always, a very short update to StepStone Group. StepStone Group currently oversees 588 billions of AUM and assets under advisory. We have committed over the last 12 months approximately 75 billion across private equity, private debt, infrastructure, and real estate. And with this number, we're probably one of the largest allocators in the market. Why is that important in our mind? It is important because we get access and very good terms with all GPs in the market, and accordingly can act in the best interest of all our LPs. We have currently 860 employees across the globe. And when we go to the next page, you see across the globe means in 14 countries and 23 offices. Actually, we just opened last week a new one. It's 24 offices globally through which we serve our LPs, but as well, which allows us on the ground to look and work at investments and to work with the GPs. Maybe on the next page quickly, an overview over the private debt team. The important news here is the private debt team did not change. We didn't have any leavers, especially not on the senior team. As you are well aware, we have a very senior team for many years. The core team is together for more than 15 years, and we've gone through more than one crisis, economical crisis, over the past. Now, the senior team is supported by additional 40 investment professionals. Maybe here to mention, out of the investment professionals we have promoted over the last 2 years, three to partners, which I think is very important as well to assure continuity. And we had various managing director promotions. By the way, we hired this year two additional managing directors just to make sure our team grows with the growth of our AUM. Important to note here as well, to my mind, on top of the investment professionals, we have a dedicated private debt team across legal, compliance, and operations of additional 75 people. That makes sure, you know, that we're always in compliance and do the best execution for our clients across the different markets. Let me start with some market observations as a start. And I always like to, on the one hand side, look a bit back in the rear mirror and then as well a bit forward. So if I look backwards and look at the data since 2005 and compare your core allocation, which as Tim mentioned is in direct lending, there is no traditional asset class that has performed on a risk-adjusted basis better than direct lending. You see, we have here a comparison of the Cliffwater Direct Lending Index against equities, high-yield bonds, levered loan, and even investment-grade bonds. Direct lending has exhibited additionally very, very favorable drawdown characteristics, not just during GFC, but as well during the pandemic, and as I mentioned, has held up as well this year as one of the few asset classes in positive territory. Now, if we are forward-looking, and we haven't taken our outlook here, but I've enclosed for you a graph which is actually produced on a regular basis by BlackRock, the largest traditional asset manager globally, what you see on the top two lines is actually private equity and private debt still are, in the outlook of BlackRock, the most favorable strategies. And if you look at the small dispersion of private debt, you can see that the expectation of return is very narrow. And so accordingly, it's one of the most favorable strategies that you can have as well on a forward basis, according to BlackRock. Now, before I go a bit into substantiating why we believe as well on a forward-looking basis private debt is very attractive, I would like to hand over very briefly to Urs, which gives you a bit of more bottom-up view of what is happening in the market currently.
All right.
Thank you, Marcel. And good morning, everybody. As it was said, the vast majority of the exposure is in direct lending, and we're zooming here in on four topics that help to paint an informed picture on this direct lending market. Firstly, on yields, the SOFR, replacement of the LIBOR as the base rate, is approximately 4% now and expected to go up further. As the borrowers pay interest in the form of base rate plus margins, the interest payments to lenders have increased accordingly, approximately 3%. Additionally, the credit margins for newly issued credits have also gone up 50 to 100 basis points. Now, what does that mean for existing borrowers? Because we do have obviously a substantial exposure already. Higher base rates results in higher income generations for the lenders. On the other hand, higher costs in challenging environments may lead to more stress for individual borrowers, which ultimately may lead to increasing loss rates. Marcel will discuss different scenarios in this aspect and consequences in a few minutes. The focus on the existing portfolios is clearly on the early detection of problems. And we spend significant time with the managers on those topics to be fully informed and early in the game. For new investments, which are also still ongoing because we are still building exposure, the new investments profit from higher base rates and the higher credit margins that can currently be achieved. And hence, that is a very attractive period to actually invest in this space. Moving on to volumes, the mergers and acquisition activities is lower than in the record year 2021, but it remains in line with the previous years, 18, 19, and early 20. It's also that the private equity firms do have substantial amount of dry powder, which they ultimately will invest. Our expectations for the next 12 months is that the volumes will be somewhat moderate, but managers with strong sourcing capabilities will be capable to continue deploying and reinvest efficiently, because that's as important. One area of particular interest is the upper middle market, where large managers get to finance companies that traditionally would access the broadly syndicated or high yield markets, but for a lack of bank appetite, they turn towards these alternative lenders. Cicero has also a mandate with a manager that gets exposure to this, to those interesting situations, which we haven't seen in the past. On lending terms, they are trending to become more lender friendly. The longer the uncertainty and related market volatility persist, volatility mainly in the liquid markets, the longer this positive trend continues to more interesting terms. And terms is not only about credit spread, it's also about covenants, which protect the lender, definitions of certain aspects on what a borrower can do. The overall debt amounts are actually reduced, which increases the probability of a strong repayment and ability to refinance down the road. So generally, you see here on the right, two dots on blue, which is favorable for lenders. Overall, a very healthy deployment. On the fundamentals,
just ask you a question on that. What if you could just provide a brief example of what you might view as the most or an important lending term that has shifted from borrower friendly to lender friendly, and why that matters?
I can give you a good term, Scott. So, for example, historically, when borrowers were $50 million or above, you would not get any covenants. Today, you're seeing frequently more and more covenants for even large borrowers. It's becoming more the market norm.
Well, I was asking because I remember after the GFC, you know, there was a lot of arm waving and hand waving about covenants in this, yeah, you know, this area, and that really for many years it seemed that there were no covenant light loans that were to be had, or at least good ones. And then, you know, like everything, that tended to wane and the pendulum shifted some, and we start hearing more about covenant light. And I just want to get a firm, you know, idea of what that translates to for us in terms of what does that mean as a direct lender, as to where the relaxation occurs or where it tightens. That's the interest.
Yeah. So Scott, for Sasera, actually nothing from a covenant perspective really changes. We have StepStone has always had a much more conservative outlook on the deal flow we will accept. And so as Tim had said, you know, with the ability of us to set up, you know, separately managed accounts on your behalf, we have investment guidelines. So 100% of your deals are covenanted, but that is not the norm for the market. And so, you know, for Sasera, nothing changes on that point. Where things do change is you're seeing, as Orr's pointed out, much improved base rate pricing, as well as some margin improvement, as well as overall, you know, credit documents have gotten tighter. When you think about baskets are much smaller, right? Leverage levels are lower. There's much more equity cushion below the lenders. So there's a lot of ways where, you know, you are benefiting with the market, but you have always had a very good, like, conservative base. I don't know if Orr's or Marcel would have anything else to include.
No, that's helpful. Thank you.
Great.
Look at Rusty, did you have your hand up?
Yep.
Nope. All right. Let's proceed. No, I'm sorry.
Yep.
No worries. Last point on fundamentals. We observed continuing overall satisfactory fundamental performance up to June 2022, with some cracks, but very few. For example, healthcare, a little bit unexpected, suffered on margins due to significantly higher staffing costs. We don't have too many data points yet to September, but some early indications are that revenues continue to grow at paces very close to 10% or above 10%, which is obviously healthy, but in line with inflation. But margins are in tendency declining. We monitor that very closely and share observations with your team during our bi-weekly calls. We are just about to kick off our quarterly calls with the managers, where we discuss fundamental performance to September and outlook. But as you wouldn't be surprised, there are some clouds forming, and we observe them closely, and we'll keep you posted. Can I answer any questions to this slide?
I don't see any hands up right now, so you can proceed. You're safe.
Then I'm passing back on to Marcel.
Thank you. Urs was talking about clouds on the sky, and so we thought it might be good, you know, to look at threats, industry developments, because often we are faced as well with the question, but there was so much money flowing into industry. What's happening in this industry? You know, can this continue as it continued in the past? And we've seen it was a very successful strategy in the past. So let me start with some industry developments and why we believe, yes, this market will further grow and will continue to be very substantial. And Ariel, if we move forward, probably two slides from here, yes. I think the first point I would like to mention is, you know what the private lending market does, the direct lending market, it actually does business that formerly was done either by banks or by public markets. Now, obviously, the banks are retrenching for obvious reasons that we already know. But what we see as well, the investment banks that actually were doing the syndicated loan transaction in public markets actually want to issue as well only for larger borrowers. That means there is an underserved industry. And let me talk about this underserved industry just in the US. We talk about 200,000 companies. We talk about 30% of GDP produced by these companies. And we talk about those companies that employ 30% of the US workforce. So this is a very, very substantial market that needs financing and that hasn't received sufficient financing from banks or from the public markets. We tend to go actually bigger. And accordingly, we believe that market continues to grow. That is one of the drivers that we see. What is going to be financed? Financed is, as mentioned, you know, our acquisitions, our buyouts, is succession planning that's actually done, add-on financing, as Tim mentioned before, that are important to grow and make this industry overall successful. And as we mentioned as well, or Tim mentioned, it's focused what we do on first lien. We want to be on top of the capital structure when we do these financings. Now, if we move on, there is another important driver, which we've seen over the years. The private equity industry has grown substantially. And the reason behind the private equity growth is, if you look at the number of companies being listed publicly, these numbers have declined year over year. So less and less companies get financed publicly. And this has driven to a large extent the private equity industry. Now, if you look at the dry powder of the private equity industry, what they still can invest and will invest over the coming years against the dry powder of private debt, the relation is 5-1. Meaning, if you imagine that a transaction normally is about financed half-half, you can imagine how much more debt is actually necessary that private equity can continue its business. So we believe the market will grow substantially over the coming years because there is an underserved market that needs that financing on a forward-going basis. Now, we can move on and talk a bit about threats, and probably everybody talks about this recently. We all know that the pandemic on one hand side and the geopolitical issues are influencing, first of all, inflation, but they have a significant impact as well on GDP growth. And in the middle, we have central banks and governments with fiscal measures and monetary measures that try to balance this very delicate situation. We have seen in the UK how fast it can get out of balance within days or weeks, unfortunately. Unfortunately, mainly for the pension funds, actually, who are truly in a very, very challenging situation due to this mismanagement. Now, at StepStone, we don't have a crystal ball to say what's going to happen going forward, but what we have at least is probably we have the most sophisticated database on private debt data and direct loans existing in the market. We have collected about 20,000 single loans, and we are currently across our platform invested in over 1,000 private credits globally. And for all these credits, we receive on a quarterly basis fundamental data. So we see the financials, how these borrowers are actually performing. That's what Urs mentioned. You know, when we go in these quarterly reviews with the GPs, we not just discuss with the GP, but we know how the underlying borrowers have performed. Now, we use this to replace, to a certain extent, the crystal ball that I mentioned before, because we don't know what's happened. So that's the reason why we work in so-called scenarios. And if we go to the next page, what we have actually done already in March of this year, and I would like to mention here, really, we did these scenarios in March of this year when we've seen the geopolitical escalation and we're fully aware that will further fuel inflation globally. What we have done scenarios according to which GDP across the globe will decline. And I just give you the middle scenario. We have assumed a decline of the US GDP to 1% and the European GDP to be slightly negative as an example. Now, based on this data and the numbers of borrowers that we have, we can now obviously analyze what would happen in these GDP scenarios to their EBTAs and to their profit margins overall. This again allows us to simulate what happens, how these borrowers are rated, and what their risk of defaults actually are. Because the risk that we face is that in the market, we're going to have defaults and we're going to have credit losses. So we look at this middle scenario, what we did, the blue scenario in the middle, and what you see is we have stressed the direct lending return on a non-levered basis, and we would expect in a scenario that we have there to have losses over 12 months of about 2.5% in a portfolio like that. Now, what you see in the points below for your reference, we stressed with the same data as well, equities, high-yield bonds, and syndicated loans. Now, interesting, this was our March scenario. If you look at the current market values at the far hand right side, you see currently we believe global public markets price in a European recession. So the scenario that we have laid out in there, it doesn't lay out though a potential global recession where we would believe defaults would spike up over 10% in these markets. But even in a global recession scenario, if you look at the data of our simulation that we do, direct lending would still are positive. So you would potentially lose around an annual return maximum compared to equities or high yield bonds who would be down between -20 and -30% in a scenario like that. So I believe, you know, even if we see threats out there in the market on a relative value basis, we have found some good shelter where we currently have positioned the portfolio in a very, very diversified way. So hopefully enough about threats. Let me look as well at moment about, you know, what we think about opportunities. And
let me Marcel, please interrupt you for a moment. One of our directors has his hand up. Jerry, you had a question or a comment?
You may be headed into this direction, so I apologize if I'm preempting this, but there are two different scenarios, basically, if you're a borrower, that seem to be the most likely ones. One is that they will hunker down because the rates are rising. The other is we need the money. We better lock it in while it's at a lower rate. So do you see pressure one way or the other? Are they more inclined to try and lock in a lower rate at this point, since the Fed seems inclined to go up at least another three quarters of a point?
Jerry, it's a very, very, very good question. You know, this flexibility of locking in a rate exists only for larger companies who can tap a bond market and can get a fixed rate. So it's like we in the mortgage rate where we have potentially, you know, the flexibility because between a fix and a floater. That exists only for the larger companies that can go to a bond market and now say, oh, better I go in, lock in my rate for the next 7-8 years and get finance and so I have stability. The borrowers in the middle market, they're always floating based. So they're really exposed to this fact that the base rate will actually increase over the coming years. But that is why normally, you know, if we look at interest rate coverage, so how many times can they pay, you know, interest out of their EBTA, that's normally north of 3 times, you know, so they have sufficient leeway actually to serve the debt that they have, even if rates actually increase.
Thank you.
Interesting.
You're welcome.
All right, thank you. Jerry, any follow-up on that? Or are you good?
I'm good, thank you.
All right.
So opportunities, and you know, let me again look in the rear mirror first and then forward looking. So looking backwards, you know, if we look at the different vintage years that we had invested across our platform and GPs, what you see here is actually the years 2008 and 2009 that we all will remember very well. These were the most attractive years to invest. Why? Because as Urs mentioned, the spread to be paid, the costs for financing went up for the companies, and only the better companies actually can come to market and get financing. So if you think at a risk-adjusted basis, better borrowers have to pay more, That's actually normally a good outcome. And that's what you see historically as well in the years 2008 and 9. These are very good vintage years. And so on a forward basis, we expect the same for 22 and 23. Now, if we go the next page, I would like to refer as well to what Urs mentioned before. It's, you see the blue line, which normally means that's the base rate. And Jerry mentioned correctly, base rate is going up, costs are going up. What's happening actually to these borrowers? Now, the base rate goes up. Normally in these moments, the orange line that you see, number one, normally declines because central banks normally raise rates in a good economic environment, which means normally costs of finance and the spread tightens. And then normally line one in green captures about 70% of the base rate increase that the companies have to pay. Now, unfortunately, we face the situation, base rates go up and we face the risk of a recession, which means these spreads in orange, they actually remain stable or partially they even increase, which again means the whole green line goes to the dotted green line on top. So it increases much more. So costs currently for company are north of 10% that they have to pay to be financed. Now, even if you now apply these loss rates that I meant before, you know, for example, this European recession scenario, and you deduct 2.5% losses over 12 months, this is still very attractive. You're still very well compensated for the risks, actually, that you enter in this market. So I think that's a very good opportunity. Now, next to this, obviously, maybe on the next page, just Ariel, very quickly, I believe, you know, in the private debt market is more than just direct lending. The core portfolio that you have is actually 70% focused on this middle market lending first lien. But we have a bucket of 20% where we can move more opportunistically. And I think it's needless to say that in an environment like that, not every company, not every situation will get financing. So there are two ways. Either they go into more distressed situation, you know, where they even need to pay more, and we need more restructuring skills of GPs that help us investing in these companies, or companies need to find alternative ways to get financed, where often they access then through asset-backed lending the necessary means to get financed. So a situation like that creates additional opportunities to deploy capital at very attractive rates going forward. Now, let me come to some few conclusions. I think the most important what we have done for your portfolio is diversification. You know, all the numbers that I showed before, they're subject to the fact you need to be well diversified. And if you look then later at the number of GPs that we work with and number of positions, you will see we are very well diversified by GPs, by market segments, and by individual borrowers. Why is this so important? Because at the end, only if we invest with different GPs in the market, we will have the chance to continuously deploy as well capital. Because I said it's very attractive now to deploy capital, but not every GP is able to do. He might have issues in his market segment. He might have issues because he needs to look at after loan positions that don't go so well. So this deployment element that we can continue to deploy and this multi-manager concept that we have set up is the key to success of this portfolio action. Now, with this, I would like to stop, ask if there are any further questions, or otherwise we will go straight into the portfolio review.
So, Jerry, you had your hand up.
One other question, if I might, back on the slide where it says opportunity two, could you give us an example, lower right-hand corner, of an asset, non-real estate oriented, just a specific example of what that might fall into that bucket?
Yeah, this can be, you know, we differentiate tangible and intangible assets. So for example, this goes then beyond corporate. If you think about in consumer lending as of today, consumer lending has changed significantly over the last years. You have all these more active lending platforms that are in this space. Now, I personally, I would not like to go and finance consumer and buy consumer credits. Too much risk, actually. But there are these platforms actually that do this financing, and they need financing to grow these platforms. So these platforms are equity financed, but they need loans actually to further grow their platforms, point of sales, whatever they actually have. Now, what we do is we actually lend against a collateralized pool of consumer loans in a senior position against a lending platform. So we have two advantages. First, we have an equity cushion behind us where the losses are absorbed by the lending platform. But on top, we have a collateral, which are consumer receivables and credits, actually a collateral that permanently needs to be renewed if they have delinquencies in a portfolio like that. So that is one example. Lending to lenders, we call this.
I'm looking for something a little bit more specific. Could you give us an example of an asset that falls in the category?
It's transportation financing. Yes, transportation financing is the other example. You know, this goes from ship to railroads. This goes obviously to airplane financing. These are typical asset-backed situation. You don't have any of those in your current portfolio, by the way, just to make this very clear, but these will be situations that will have difficulties to find financing and where the rates will increase substantially. And you probably find outsized returns for very good risk going forward.
Okay, that helps. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions of the team or Marcel in specific? I'm not seeing any hands up, so I think we can move forward.
Good. A brief recap on the mandate. As you all know, we designed the mandate during the second half of 2017 and started investing in Q2 2018. The collaboration with your investment team is close, frequent, and mainly supported by regular bi-weekly calls. Up to June of this year, we had commitments out of 1.3 billion, and they all have been issued in line with the agreed portfolio construction. Ongoing business is the upsize of an existing managed account and the implementation of an additional managed account, which again, we're closely discussing the steps with your team. Apart from the could you go to the next slide, please, Ariel? Apart from the target percentage, which has increased by 2%, the investment objective has remained unchanged since the beginning. Key points are the 13%, which initially was 11%. It's mainly first lien, as we have secured corporate debt, as we have mentioned several times. The target net return is 10% over a cycle, and we want to retain an element of flexibility through the implementation approach, which I get to on the next slide with the portfolio construction. As you can see here, the largest proportion in blue is we call it core. That's the specific CESERA mandate. So that's mandates that we set up with managers that only invest in loans that are for the CESERA account. Obviously, that manager has other clients that also invest in these loans, but a specific portion of each loan is singled out for the CESERA mandate. These are all first lien direct lending loans, as also mentioned a couple of times. They command preferential terms due to the size of both the CESERA allocation and the overall StepStone relationship. All mandates allow to control risks, investment periods, distributions. We can stop investing and generally provide flexibility to the investor. We currently have four of these mandates. A fifth is planned for early 2023. Maybe at the bottom right, you can see a simplified market map where we show the different segments in the middle market. And you can see we have a manager in each of the market segments. That's the lower middle market, the mid-middle market, and the upper middle market indicate the basic company sizes that are there. And in blue, an additional one in the mid-middle market that also have a sizable exposure to non-sponsored transactions, i.e. Companies that are not owned by private equity firm. So a very diversified portfolio. In the satellite bucket, we currently have 7 investments. That includes a number of traditional commingled funds. They are diversifying to the portfolio. They are smaller in single allocations, and they are diversifying with regards to asset classes, strategies, market segments, and also include two credit specialties, the opportunistic credit fund and the specialty finance fund. Cover a bit towards these opportunities that Marcel was pointing out on the slide before. So there is, we're building some exposure to these additional premia that can be generated. Finally, there is a bucket for co-investments, which currently represents approximately 8% of the overall portfolio. So we're within that 20% and has been fairly stable around this 7.5% to 8% for a while. With that, I would hand over to Ariel to continue the review of the mandate.
Thanks, Urs. So just lastly on pacing, as Urs mentioned, the target allocation is now 13%. You'll see we achieved that in 2024. And then most importantly, what you should really focus on this chart is that the portfolio actually becomes self-funding in 2025. And you can see how that has occurred over time. And so those are really the two key points on this slide. And then before we move in, before I move into then the more deep dive section, lastly, I just wanted to talk about the coordination we've had among the team. So we have had, you know, more than 25 coordination calls, biweekly calls, we call them, with the team. We've welcomed them in our New York, London, and Zurich offices. And then it's been a very busy year. We've also established a new SMA. We've added 2 new primary funds that are quite diversifying and done several different co-investments. So before I leave the section, just wanted to check, Scott, if there's any other questions on the section before we go into the actual performance.
Any other questions for Ariel before we move on? I'm not seeing any hands up, Ariel, so proceed.
Perfect, great. All right, so this slide serves as a high-level overview of the sequential performance of the overall portfolio. As you saw on the previous slide, we have 4 SMAs, 7 primary funds, and over 39 co-investments. What I think is most interesting is that, you know, the goals of the program, as Urs had hinted at earlier, was to have a 10% IRR over a cycle. So you can see that the gross IRR is about 10% and the net IRR 9.5%. But most importantly is really, you know, Scott, as you pointed out on the covenants and the new terms, is really those portfolio statistics, right? So you have a very conservatively structured portfolio. Your average net senior leverage is 4.5 times. Your average EBITDA is almost 50 million. 100% of your deals have at least one covenant, and you're at 99% first lien or unitranche. So this is a very, you know, conservative portfolio. And importantly, these statistics have stayed consistent over really the life of the portfolio. And then lastly, as Marcella pointed out, diversification is really important in private debt. And you have almost 400 borrowers. So this provides a portfolio with a significant amount of diversification and ballast in a recessionary type environment. And then if I move on to this slide, this is a fun slide to talk about, just because you can see that, as we said, we'd like to be at 10% over a cycle. So since inception, the performance has been 10%. This is as of 2018, and has handily beat the 2 closest indices, Cliffwater and S&P. And just to help you understand why we chose these indices, so the Cliffwater Direct Lending direct lending index. It's an asset weighted index. It has over 10,000 originated middle market loans as of June 30th, 2022, with about 78% is senior debt and 10% is sub debt. The remainder is really equity or other categories. And this data comes from a highly reputable source. It's sourced from publicly reported BDCs, as opposed to, you know, some less regulated, reliable data. And it's not perfectly apples to apples with the Cicera portfolio, but we would argue the Cicera portfolio is not too far off from the complexion of the Cliffwater Index, given, you know, the Cicera portfolio has about 90% direct lending and the Cliffwater between the senior and the sub-debt is just under 90%. Cliffwater is also almost is 100% North America focused, as is the Cicera portfolio. And then we include the S&P LSTA as well, just because this is one of the standard benchmarks that everyone looks at. So you can see throughout every period that the portfolio has performed, you know, performed well, but in line with our expectations. And then if I move on to the last two slides, so this is the second to last slide, and then happy to take more questions. So as we think about portfolio exposure, as Marcel alluded to, this portfolio is diversified by manager, by sector. It is 100% North American focus. And then also has, you know, majority is obviously direct lending, but we do have some diversifying satellite funds in terms of real estate credit and regulatory capital. And then lastly, from a cash flow perspective, the deployment and distributions have remained relatively consistent over the last five quarters and frankly, over the last couple of years that we've discussed this with the board, you know, over 90% of the portfolio, you know, as we know, has the deployment, over 70% of the deployment is from SMAs. And you can see by manager that that's, you know, primarily the SMAs. And you can see that over the last year, you've deployed about 200 million. And last year when we did this, it was around the same number, about 250, 300. So very consistent portfolio over time.
Ariel, if I can just ask, it's actually from the prior slide. What can you give me an example of regulatory capital?
Yeah, so this is when banks have to sell off some of their loans due to regulations. And so there are some credit partners that we work with that you have in your portfolio, one of which you have in your portfolio that does this quite successfully.
Okay. It's like a risk transfer deal that they do. So they take a whole portfolio. They actually do like securitization. So a junior piece is sold, you know, in absorbing losses potentially across a very well-diversified portfolio that gives them capital relief ultimately for the bank, that they don't have the same capital charge, which allows them not to sell the loans, but to hold on to these loans. And that's kind of one of the potential arbitrage that's mainly done in Europe, actually, if it's regulatory capital.
So is that a form of distressed lending that's fancier?
No, because it's only performing credits. So if you think it's more, it's a regulatory deal, actually, because, you know, it's more efficient for them actually to finance this tranche, this junior tranche, which gives them capital relief. So the cost of their capital that they actually have in the bank is higher than actually what we get here for the regulatory capital. Although this is a double-digit return, their relief on the capital side is bigger. And so it's a bit a regulatory arbitrage to a certain extent.
Okay. Got it. Thank you.
Scott, any other questions we can answer on the program or market?
I don't see any other. Oh, I do. Jerry, you had your hand up. Apologize.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to ask if the group would indulge me for just a little bit more on one of Marcel's answers. But sometimes it takes me a little while to catch up to the responses. On infrastructure, you said, which I took some comfort in knowing, that we don't have any investments along those lines. But you cited infrastructure as like airline fleets, fleets of ships, which I would maintain are probably all leased themselves. So the parallel I'm looking for here, I guess, or comes to mind, is a private person going to a bank who attempts to secure a loan and lists his rental or his leased car as an asset. The bank is not going to qualify his leased asset as an asset. And so is it fair for someone to suggest that their fleet of leased airplanes or leased ships is an asset?
It's in the airplane space. It's, for example, mainly it's actually engines. You know, it's the airplane engines normally. That's, as you probably know, they're normally, you know, borrowed against, you know, which then are used by the different fleets on the other hand to be used. But the financing of the engines, for example, that's a typical deal, you know, in that space. Or in ship financing, very clearly, you know, if you think about ship financing, that's really a hard asset, you know, where you somewhere find the value against you borrow, which is normally kind of the new price of a ship. It's the scrap price of a ship. And it's actually, you know, the usage times freight rate somehow. These three kind of value components will determine, you know, against what you're actually willing to lend. Banks have done that in the past. You might have seen that, for example, mainly German banks have been extremely active in the past. They've pushed these credits actually into public companies which were sold to retail. This ended very badly because then they were open-ended on top. So they had to retrieve from this business. So there is a big financing gap, for example, in ship financing. And we work not for your portfolio, but in general, we work with some of these companies that finance ships as well. So these are real hard assets, actually. But then on the intangible side, if you think about it, it's royalties, you know, music rights. There is a lot, you know, in that space, or sports rights, you know, that actually can be subject as well in the intangible asset, you know, that they're actually pledged as a collateral.
Okay, I won't say
again. Not
more.
In your portfolio. Not
I'm just
in your
say,
portfolio.
Happy to not have it. Not in our portfolio. Thank you.
Jerry's going to wonder what the scrap value of a music portfolio is.
Yeah, I'm checking out Kanye West's involvement with the Adidas right now.
Yes.
Yes.
Scott.
Yeah.
First, I'm not wearing any Adidas. Tennis shoes on Conway. If we could stay for just a moment, I'm thinking of Carnival and other major shipping companies whose stock has absolutely collapsed because they had huge debts for shipping and other infrastructures we've been describing. And all of a sudden, of course, we went into a pandemic for 2 years and the number of cruises dropped off dramatically. Do we have any of those kinds of investments in what we're describing?
You, as I mentioned, no ship financing, but obviously you had companies that were impacted by the pandemic as well. Think about any restaurants or gyms that have been financed, you know, gym chains or restaurant chains, you know, that have been financed. They obviously had impacted in the past. Urs, you want to elaborate a bit further on this?
Yes, I mean, this is what gets to me to be real. I have trouble, I guess, assimilating all of the super broad categories. When you get into very specific things that we buy or don't buy and why we do it, that's to me much more helpful.
Imagine, you know, we've shown a bit the industry specifics, you know, the diversification, and Ariel, you might want to go to this, but please consider one of the reasons why we diversify, so invest so diversified. We have over 380 positions. So there is for sure a gym in there somewhere, or a gym-related business. There is for sure a restaurant kind of related business in there, hospitality that has been impacted by the pandemic. So you see, there is not an industry that we have left out, actually. And the reason for that is, you know, what I said during the pandemic is the following. This time it was a biological virus. Imagine this was an IT virus that had impacted the globe in the same dimension, which is, by the way, looking at the cyber threats, not to be excluded. You know, the list of impacted borrowers and industry would look very different. We still could all go on travels, but IT would look completely different. That's why diversification is so important.
All right.
Thank you.
All right, well, we can proceed.
I think that's the end of our slides, so happy to, if there are any other questions, take them.
Excellent. All right, so are there any further questions for Urs, Marcel, or Ariel? I'm not seeing any hands up, so thank you. You can stop sharing the screen if you want so I can get a little better picture of everybody. So certainly on behalf of everybody, thank you for a very thoughtful and full presentation, as always, very interesting.
Thank you.
I know
Jerry's probably going to spend a lot of time wondering if we're, you know, backing payday lending, because I when you were describing examples of lending opportunities of consumer lending, where folks in the borrowing business or lending business are borrowing money to lend. I couldn't think of a more scary proposition than that. One of them. So without further, well, I don't see any other hands. So thank you all for joining us. Thoughtful presentation. Tim, thank you. Get your voice healed up.
Have a great meeting. Bye.
All right.
Thank you for having us.
Have a good day.
Thank you.